Hello and welcome to Whence Came You, a Freemasonic podcast featuring research papers and discussions related to Freemasonry. I'm your host, Brother Robert Johnson. Well, I have some news this week. I received an email from a brother, and he will be starting a new podcast. Not necessarily Masonic, but more mainstream and with some comedy and whatnot. He did ask if I would be willing to call out to LA once a week and record a famous Freemason for his show. I agreed. I considered it a great honor to be able to help. That brother has also just released a book, and I'll have more details on that as they develop. I'll do two different famous Freemasons each week, one on our show and one on his. Also, I have some short talk bulletins for this week and another exclusive wallpaper. For you Android users, the wallpaper may have been corrupted last week, and I wanted to apologize. If you want it, just shoot me an email with the word wallpaper in the subject. You don't even have to type anything. As soon as I see that, I'll shoot it out to you. This week, I'll be performing the George Washington birthday ritual, which is quite neat, at my home lodge. If you want a copy of it, let me know. I'll certainly be willing to email that to you. I'll be performing the junior warden part, as I am the junior warden of my lodge. I was rummaging through my lodge's library last week looking for some things that we could display, and I found a board game called Build. It was made by the Supreme Council of the Northern Masonic Jurisdiction and was distributed in like 1980s. Anyway, I had contacted them, and apparently 1980 was the last year that they did anything with it. So if you guys have a copy, keep it around in your lodge. It's an antique and somewhat of a Masonic treasure. I'm going to see what we can do about keeping ours in good condition. So, how many of you are visiting the Midnight Freemasons? I hope you guys are checking it out regularly. It is one of the best Masonic blogs out there. We have regular contributors, including several published authors, and one of the authors includes the original Midnight Freemason, Todd E. Creason, who actually is working on another book. He has several out. If you want to submit something for the Midnight Freemasons, send a brief bio in the paper to me at wcypodcast@gmail.com, and in the subject line, type submission. Also, I have to stress that if we put that paper up, your paper, on our website, it is still your intellectual property. We don't own it or anything else. So think about it, and I hope you guys decide to start submitting some original pieces. They don't have to be scholarly or written in college format like MMA or anything, but just something coherent, Masonic, and interesting. Anyway, this week's first piece is called Geometry and the Divine Ratio, which is a short talk bulletin from July 2012. Geometry and the Divine Ratio by David R. Ritchie. The Reverend and Right Worshipful Brother Ritchie is serving as Grand Chaplain of the Grand Lodge of Wisconsin and writes as a regular column, Thoughts for the Journey, for the Wisconsin Masonic Journal. He is a member of two lodges in Wisconsin. He is active in the York Rite, Scottish Rite, and Order of the Eastern Star, and is a member of the Shrine. Reverend Ritchie serves as a pastor of Waldwick Community Church in Waldwick and also farms in rural Darlington. As Masons, we have a special tie to geometry, and often this tie is coupled with the divine. Why do we as Masons see God's handiwork in mathematics? In the Fellowcraft Charge, we are told that geometry, or Masonry, is of a divine or moral nature. Later in that same charge, we are told that mathematics not only proves the wonderful properties of nature, but that it also demonstrates the important truths of morality. In the beautiful G lecture, again, from the Fellowcraft degree, we are told that through geometry, we can trace nature through her various windings and find out nature's most hidden secrets. From the same lecture, we find that, again, through geometry, we can discover the power, the wisdom, and the goodness of the grand artificer of the universe. We can view, with awe and delight, the proportions of this vast machine. That sounds like a lot to expect out of geometry. If you were like me, geometry was one of those classes in school that you needed to get through, but with the theorems, proofs, and constructions, geometry was far from my favorite class. The only person who was ever excited was the teacher. So why as Masons are we so excited by geometry? Why do we view it as of a divine nature? The answer is twofold. First, when speculative Masonry was beginning in the 1600s and early 1700s, man was unfolding the mysteries of nature and science at an unprecedented rate. This was the Age of Enlightenment. The men of science and mathematics were looking to tie these new discoveries into their faith. The thing they rediscovered had been known to the ancient Egyptians, Romans, and Greeks. The Oriental cultures had been using it for centuries. It was used extensively by the great minds of the Renaissance. This discovery that seemed to tie everything together was a number, 1.618, which was represented by the Greek letter phi. This number, 1.618, is actually a ratio and was referred to as the golden ratio, the golden mean, the divine golden section, the divine mean, or the divine proportion. This is a long equation and some in-depth math that explain the number, so I will let you look that up yourself. Dan Brown in his books talks about the divine proportion. This amazing thing about this number is that where and how it shows up. The divine ratio is found in architecture from the pyramids, statues, and tombs of Egypt, Chinese and Japanese temples and gardens, the Notre Dame Cathedral in Paris, and the Empire State Building of New York. The most famous example, though, is the Parthenon in Greece. The building contains hundreds of examples of this golden ratio throughout. The shape of the building is according to the ratio. The pillars, the space between the pillars, the statues that line on top, etc., all conform to the divine mean. The buildings rated as the most aesthetic worldwide are examples of this ratio. So, as builders, we Masons should find this ratio intriguing. Where does the divine come in? The same ratio is found in the way sunflower seeds line on the face of the flower. All the key features of a penguin, the branching of the trees, the number of petals on a flower, the breeding of rabbits, plant growth, the alignment of the planets in our solar system, the chambers in a nautilus shell, and the arms in a spiral galaxy. The list of where this ratio appears seems endless. The human face contains hundreds of examples of the divine ratio, from our smiles to the distance between the eyes to the chin, etc. The surprising thing is that the closer one's features conform to this ratio, the more beautiful or handsome the person is deemed. The further off this ratio, the more homely. The human body contains thousands more. Polycet's statue of Aphrodite, often deemed the masterpiece of feminine beauty, Botticelli's painting, The Birth of Venus, or the famous Venus de Milo by an unknown artist of Antioch, are all constructed almost perfectly with this ratio. Da Vinci, Michelangelo, Raphael, Turner, and Surratt all used the divine section to create their masterpieces of art. The keys on an organ or piano are laid out according to the ratio. The fingerboard on a guitar, musical scales, musical frequencies, and most string instruments conform to the divine ratio. The perfect shape for musical amplifier is a rectangle which is based on this ratio. A cross-section of human DNA contains at least 10 instances of the golden mean. For the men of the Enlightenment, the answer was obvious. Wherever God placed his hand, the number 1.618 phi, or the divine proportion, was left behind. Whatever the grand architect created, feathers on a bird, seeds in a flower, or the arrangement of their petals, the beauty of the human face, the alignment of the planets, and the stars themselves, the golden section was evident. Wherever the grand artificer of the universe inspired the cathedrals and gardens, music, paintings, and sculpture, man was able to find this ratio. Like an architect draws up his building, so the grand architect must have drawn up his plans for the flower, the nautilus shell, the human form, the planets, the stars. God's beauty and blessings is reflected in geometry. To study the liberal art of geometry was to study the divine nature of all things. Today, science has explained much of what was a mystery in the 1700s. The golden ratio is no longer held to be the proof of God's existence or plan, but the sheer number of times it appears in things natural and man-made are staggering. It is with little wonder why our brothers of this time found that by a study of this ratio or geometry, we discover the power, the wisdom, and the goodness of the grand artificer of the universe, and view with delight the proportions which connect this vast machine. All right, next is another short talk bulletin entitled Are You a Mason? I Am, But... open-ended, published April of 2011. Are You a Master Mason? I Am, But... by Vern Wertz. Brother Vern Wertz is a past Grand Master of the Grand Lodge of Oregon. A longtime Masonic lecturer and writer, his words have always brought the meaning and value of Freemasonry to Masons everywhere. Master Masons are all familiar with the question, Are You a Master Mason? They are equally familiar with the answer, I am. There is nothing wrong with the question, but the answer is flawed, seriously so. I am reasonably certain that most, if not all of you, are thinking, now there is a statement that needs some explaining. Since I do not disagree, let me try. My dad, in the final years of his working life, was a master craftsman, a carpenter, who made his living doing finish work on very fine homes. He did not do this at the start of his career. One day when I was just a lad, I found my dad at the dining room table with a paper, pencil, and two books on carpentry. I inquired as to why he was doing what looked to me like was a waste of time. After all, he was already a carpenter. His answer was, Son, I have to constantly improve myself in the skills of my craft. At that time, I did not think much of or about that statement. I distinctly recalled it later in my life. It was 10 years later, I was a college graduate, had a teaching certificate, and a job to teach science. It took about a week on the job for me to realize that while I had the title and apparently all the rights and privileges thereunto appertaining, I was not a teacher, nor was I certain I ever would become one. It was probably 5 years later that I began to think of myself as a teacher who knew that if he was ever to become a master craftsman, it would be necessary to continually, uneasingly improve himself in the useful skills needed to help a child learn. I did not believe that it is the great leap in reasoning to suggest that the night a man is raised, he is not yet a master mason. He has the title, has the rights and privileges, but he has not yet mastered the set of skills that will make him a master mason. He has to travel. That will be extremely interesting, beset with many challenges, and over a period of years, he may perchance meet again and again with gentle awakening light. Let's make it clear, people who expect to have complex subject like creation of Freemasonry explained from beginning to end in 3 easy lessons are asking the impossible. Man is limited. And we are not given to overnight comprehension of sublime mysteries. We arrive at understanding in the usual human way, stumbling and bumbling along, but hope is given to us. A seed can spend a long time in the darkness before pushing shoots through the barrier of the soil and then into the light. We too spend time in darkness, but with time, patience, and perseverance, we can gain the light. In this search, we will meet barriers that must be passed. As Masons, we learn that everything that pushes us toward the light, service to others, love, fortitude, truth must ultimately lead to conquering the barriers of pride, prejudice, ignorance, and superstition. That is enough of anecdotes. What does our ritual have to say? Power within our ritual is found in the inevitable growth and fruitfulness that comes to the man who ponders those words, opens his heart to the life-changing possibilities of the words. I have come to believe that once in a while there will come a man whose eyes will brighten with a vision upon hearing those words, and he will change others' men's lives by sharing, by teaching the hidden beauty, the hidden meaning of those words. In the prayer used at initiation, we hear, "Grant that this candidate may dedicate his life." In an apron lecture, brothers told that it is yours, yours to wear throughout an honorable life. Both of these indicate that Freemasonry is a journey of a lifetime. In the Fellowcraft, we learn that Freemasonry is a progressive science and that we are progressing therein. Progressive, as used here, implies a step-by-step process, and that of necessity means over a period of time. In the Master Mason, we are told that we have received or are about to receive everything that can be conferred on us. While the Master does not say it, it is clear to me there must be rights and benefits to be gained after this conferral. That means at a later date, and that, once again, means the passing of time, the lapse of years. Every master has duty to help his brethren utilize that time and translate our ritual into something life-changing. Yes, I know that Freemasonry is fundamentally a thing of the individual, and a man's growth largely depends on his own search for light. But he can use some help. That help comes from the master and those brothers who are willing to share what they have learned on their journey. Brothers who have buried the bitter ashes of pessimism, and by both word and deed seek to share a real value found in words like truth, honor, and fortitude. Thus, it is wit and wisdom of our brother that will be the lamp unto our feet, that lamp which lights our way as we move progressively forward by the force of historical, a shared wisdom, a wisdom that has gained over time the sharing of it, the accepting of it, not surprisingly, takes time. In some ways, ours is a strange brotherhood. We walk a common road, but we do not arrive at a common destination. This should surprise no one, as we bring with us quite different life experiences, different educations, different needs and desires. I believe that the freedom to pursue and discover the light of Freemasonry based on our own interests, our own needs, and our own talents is the great strength of Freemasonry, a strength that unites men together with the cement of brotherly love and affection, men who would otherwise forever be at an inseparable distance. One of the things that unites them is their searching, questing minds, minds that do not reluctantly hunker down in the face of a challenge or of change. We have but do not really need the minds of traditionalists blind to any good in change, and innovators who are so eager for change that they miss the value, the beauty to be found in tradition. We have and really need minds that understood one of the fundamental laws of nature decrees that those living things that cannot change, cannot adapt, become extinct. This law is absolutely applicable to human institutions. In the face of that, we must never surrender our will to the fear of innovation or the comfort of tradition. It seems like there could be confusion in the temple. Do not worry. There is refuge in the fact that Freemasonry can change, can adapt. It may do so slowly and over time, but it does do it. I think it does it because of all those good men struggling to become Master Masons. Thus, through the succession of the ages and transmitted, unimpaired, those most excellent tenets that lead good men to become better men, masters of their craft, and the glory, the joy of it all, is that each brother can walk his own pathway, develop his own understandings, and give his own meanings to all that is contained in our ritual. In this way, he becomes a part of that magnificent whole, the glorious creation that is Freemasonry. I do not believe in a wasteful creator or a diffuse, confused creation. At the root of every controlling force in nature are immutable laws of unity and harmony. If Freemasonry teaches a man anything, it is that necessity to seek such unity and harmony in his own life. Who can doubt that, trying to live a harmonious, rational life, trying to make a life of service to God and man, trying to gain and share the light of Freemasonry is happily, in my opinion, a journey of a lifetime. So the next time that you hear that famous question, I hope you will smile to yourself and silently say, "I'm working on it." Next, I have to mention our Android and Apple apps, which let you stream the show and give you access to bonus features like weekly Masonic wallpapers and the papers that we read via PDF, even video clips at times. By purchasing the app, 70 cents goes toward the show to keep the lights on. Now, another way that you can help out is by using Stitcher Smart Radio to listen. Simply download it on your mobile device, register for free with the promo code Whence Came You with no spaces, and then search for our show. This is free, but when you use that promo code, Stitcher Smart Radio sends our show $1 to support. And lastly, if you want to support the show but are not into the apps, we do have a PayPal donation button on the website at wcypodcast.com. So any of those things helps offset some cost. Next is this week's famous Freemason, John Northcott. John Northcott, Lieutenant General Sir John Northcott, born 24th of March 1890 and passed on the 4th of August 1966, was an Australian Army General who served as Chief of the General Staff during World War II and commanded the British Commonwealth Occupation Force in the occupation of Japan. He was the first Australian-born Governor of New South Wales. Northcott joined the Australian Army as a reservist in 1908, before becoming a regular officer in 1912. On duty in Tasmania when the Great War broke out in 1914, he joined the 12th Infantry Battalion, a unit from that state. He was wounded in the landing of Gallipoli on Anzac Day and invalided to Egypt, the United Kingdom, and ultimately Australia, taking no further part in the fighting. After the war, Northcott served a series of staff posts. He attended the Staff College, Camberley, and Imperial Defense College, and also spent time overseas as an exchange officer with the British Army and as a military attaché in the United States and Canada. During World War II, Northcott was attached to the British 7th Armored Division in the Middle East to study armored warfare, returning to Australia in December of 1941 to organize a new 1st Armored Division. In March 1942, he assumed command 2nd Corps. In September of 1942, he was appointed Chief of the General Staff. As General Sir Thomas Blamey's principal non-operational subordinate, he was responsible for administrating and training the wartime army. After the war, he served as commander of the British Commonwealth Occupation Force in the post-war occupation of Japan. He retired from the army in 1946 to become the governor of New South Wales. On August 1, 1946, Northcott became the first Australian-born and one of the longest-serving governors of New South Wales. As such, he gave patronage and support to many charitable organizations and to youth, church, and citizens groups. Blarney was unable to secure a knighthood for Northcott, but his military service, it being Australian Labour Party policy not to award knighthoods at that time. However, he was made a Knight of the Venerable Order of St. John of Jerusalem in December of 1946, a Knight Command of the Order of St. Michael and St. George for his services as governor in 1950, and a Knight Command of the Royal Victorian Order in 1954 for his work with the royal tour of Queen Elizabeth II. He was a Freemason, who during his term as governor was Vice-Regal Grand Master of the Grand Lodge of New South Wales. He retired in July of 1957. In April 1964, Northcott and Forday represented Australia at General MacArthur's funeral in Washington, D.C. He was survived by his two daughters. Sir John died on the 4th of August 1966 in his home at Warunga, New South Wales. He was accorded a state funeral with military honors and was cremated. Like most governors of New South Wales, his papers are in the State Library of New South Wales. While Governor Northcott was patron of New South Wales Society for Crippled Children, he continued to take an active in its affairs for the rest of his life. In 1995, the charity changed its name to the Northcott Society in his honor. In 2004, it became the Northcott Disability Services, providing care to people of all ages with disabilities. That's it for this week. Remember to find us on Facebook and follow on Twitter at Whence Came You. We're on Tumblr and Pinterest as well as Google+, at the email address wcypodcast@gmail.com. Please stop by the midnightfreemason.blogspot.com 3 times a week for new content on Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays. If you want to do an interview on the show, send me an email about it. And in the subject line, type interview. Also, I want to take a moment to thank some people for their continued work of somewhat unofficial, non-paid volunteers of the show, like Brother Jeff Koch, who is always helpful in sending out info to me, Brother Bobby Lamar for sending me some great articles, Brother Johnny Ogiano, Brother Joseph James, Michael Stedman, Todd Paderak, Rob Walk, Juan Sepulveda, Robert Lewis, Travis Apollonius, John Paul Gomez, and all the brothers and sisters over at the Midnight Freemason. And also, Brother Brian. I hope you don't mind, but I want to say, if you're listening, that your dad was a true exemplar of Masonry. And this week, we sign out in a moment of silence for Brother Brian's dad, Brother Ron Butch Shimeon. Thus ends the record of a just and upright Mason. A moment of silence. And we'll talk to you all next week. Stay on the level. For Whence Came You, I'm Robert Johnson.